Dr. Andrews has received his dental degree from Marquette University. He served in the U.S. Navy with an oral surgery fellowship from 1975 to 1976. He served in the Indian Health Service in North Dakota. He has a PhD in pain management, a PhD in pain research, and a PhD in education. Dr. Andrews is also an expert witness in dental forensics.
You are listening to The Smart Dental Student, your source for information regarding dental school and your professional journey, with your hosts, Matt Manley and Landon Guy.
Dr. Andrews, I have my colleague, Savannah Buchanan here. She is both a classmate of mine and also one of the editors for A Smart Dental Student. She writes a lot of the descriptions for our episodes. And I've currently got her. She is also going to be going into the Navy after school along with me. So we'll both be going and doing the Navy after this. And so I thought you'd appreciate that being from the Navy yourself. And so Savannah's got a few questions for you about forensic dentistry, but I'll go ahead and let her kind of introduce herself a little bit more before we start talking about that.
Oh, absolutely. That is so nice of you to have her on. I am very impressed with your team. Matt, you have a wonderful team.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dr. Andrews. Matt gave me quite the introduction there, but I'm Savannah, and it's nice to talk to you today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, Savannah.
So Dr. Andrews, what has your journey been like so far as deciding to go through with becoming a forensic dentist and then your career as a forensic dentist?
All right. My career as a dentist following dental school, I was in the Navy for 4 years. I was on a scholarship program, and I had 4 years that I served. The thing about that is that you can do whatever needs to be done that's presented to you without any worry about financial arrangements or anything else. So all aspects of dentistry are available to you. Now, in doing that, we talked about your sandbox. What is in your sandbox when you come out of school? And then what do you add to it? When you are going into the military, you will be with experienced dentists as well. So going back to that, you watch how the experienced dentists do that. The transition that through your career is learning what the normal is and what the standards of care are from the American Dental Association, American Medical Association for medical issues, and from the different societies. What is the normal? What are your responsibilities to the standard of care? Okay.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, with the Navy, you don't have a lot of the, you know, liability or pressure involved as you would when you have your own practice. So the Navy gives you a lot of flexibility to explore.
That is absolutely true. Without those 4 years that I did on a Navy, in fact, I was very fortunate in the Navy. I spent a year in Keflavik, Iceland, and learned from the dentists that were there. We had some people who had fellowships and everything else, and I learned. I came to Orlando, and I was part of the big group. It was here at the training center. Then I was transferred to a ship up in Jacksonville. And, oh, my gosh, I got to see so many different things. So many different things while I was there that when I decided to leave the Navy and go into private practice, my sandbox was much bigger. And I was confident of standing in this in the box and doing what I knew how to do. And that's the advantage of being there. That's the advantage of going in with another dentist, going into a practice and watching and learning, and fellowships that are available.
And
you know what the normal is.
I was going to ask, with that norm, what does normal look like? What is the standard of care? How did that play into when you, I guess, when did you decide to get involved in forensic dentistry? And then how did you kind of figure out what normal or what the standard of, I mean, there's really, I don't know if standard of care is the right way to say it, but how did you go around or go about getting involved and then learning what the standard of forensic traumatology and stuff like that looked like?
Actually, standard of care rules dentistry, medicine, engineering, everything. And the standard of care is defined as what would a dentist, similar training and experience, do in this situation? How would that happen? All right, what is the correct way to do that for the results? For me, when I came out, I went to a little town in Florida called Orange City. There were only a couple of thousand people there and in our area. And then it started growing. What happened is I started seeing patients from automobile accidents and trauma. And I was the treating doctor. Well, many of these patients were involved in lawsuits based on what happened to them. So I was brought into the field as the treating dentist. And of course, then they would ask you, is this related to the accident and what was there? And then you would learn what was there before the accident, if one of your patients had been injured. So you learn what was there, what happened, and what's going to have to be done to fix it. And I started doing that in 1978, a few months after I was in private practice. So that's how I started. It was brought to me by situations and then grew from there as my practice grew and my professional experience expanded.
And what did this training for everything that you've seen, what did that look like? Did you take a course or was it more just application in the field and what you saw in private practice?
Okay, that is an excellent question. Absolutely excellent. When you see things and you want to become involved in evaluating situations that someone else was the dentist, okay? Someone else's dentistry is being evaluated. Other patients that are not yours, they're being evaluated. That again goes back to what I've said, knowing what the normal is and what's the standard of care. Well, you learn that through additional courses. And on my CV, you go to courses for that and you learn what exactly is it that as an expert witness is your responsibility. Okay? You only have one responsibility, and that is always to tell the truth as you see it, according to what the standard of care is, as you understand it. Okay? You may not always be right in your decision in the beginning, but you learn that. And you get involved with organizations for general dentists, for becoming a dentist who's doing expert witness. In my situation, I decided that I needed more training in radiology. So I went in a program through one of our groups to Baylor and Texas A&M. This course was in Dallas, and became certified in cranial and cervical radiology. I am basically, I could become a radiologist, which is a specialist, and I am board eligible for that. But I chose not to do that, because once you choose that profession as a specialty, back then, you know, you were really involved with it. And you must go on learning how to present evidence, how to write reports. So the American College of Forensic Examiners became a certified diplomat of dental expert witness and medical expert witness as it related to dental situations. Okay. And then you went on and went on with beginning with becoming diplomat in motor vehicle trauma and forensic traumatology. So with that background, you can imagine the time involved in that. Matt mentioned, which was very kind of him, that I have three PhDs from two different universities that joined together in a program. It went from 2000 to 2006. I put 6 years in to doing that, flying back and forth to California, taking the time and everything else to be able to have the credentials to do expert witness work.
And is this something that you... is this something that you do more as like a something on the side, or is this like forensic dentistry and traumatology? Is that something that you do more full time?
I am more part, I would say 75% at the present time, because of medical conditions that I have. Most dentists who do this do it within limited fields, operative dentistry. If someone was very big in implants, they would take implant courses. They would do that. In 1989, as I said, I had a incident where I fell and I lost some vision in my left eye, my depth perception. And I changed with that. And then with motor vehicle accident after that, I had some issues. It was my pleasure to serve in the Marine Corps and the Navy. I did have some incidents with that, which changed my life. I was a combat veteran. I am a 100% disabled VA veteran from issues in combat and Agent Orange that changed my life medically. So my situation went, I can do this as well. I was a full-time, working full-time dentist until a COVID thing came along. And then because of my medical conditions here in the last couple of years, I've limited my practice to traumatic incidences with children. And I've been doing more on a percentage basis, expert witness work across the major portion of dentistry, okay, as it's going like that. So in my situation, it came along like that. You are always asked by the attorneys in these things the question that you just asked. Doctor, how much of your time is devoted to being an expert witness?
They're trying to measure your credibility.
Yeah, right. What is your percentage of income. They are not kind if you're a hired gun. Have Gun, Will Travel was the name of a television program a long time ago. Okay? You cannot be in that situation where they know that they can buy you and buy your opinion and things like that. And there are very, very few people who go in that direction because they're found out very easily when you go into depositions in the court. So people who do expert witness work is normally a part-time thing that they do based upon their experience. Okay, on their experience.
And do they typically get called based on their experience as far as, like, let's say I was a dentist in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I got a call. Would I get a call from, like, New Jersey, or would I stay pretty local, or would it just depend on my specialty?
It would depend on how you were focused. If you had in your CV and everything else, did you do that, or they found you through other sources? There are organizations that you can join that are actually where experts are found, like Martindale Hubble for lawyers. You know, who is an expert witness, and they call you and explain the case to you. You in North Carolina, like I am here in Florida, can practice and be an expert witness in all states in the United States by your license in one state, except for Oklahoma. In Oklahoma, you must have an Oklahoma license. And here in Florida, we have a licensing program that you have to be licensed as an expert witness in Florida to testify in Florida. Those are the only two exceptions. That you can do cases, you can accept cases from anywhere in the world.
And are there ever any cases where you could volunteer at, like, a local police department or investigative service, or will you always be called?
The way you can do that on that basis is if you are being a treating person for that. You, as an expert like that, you need to have the training. And if you are involved, let's just say that you need to have something for the cause that's there with it. If you are like that, you cannot be employed by somebody as an expert witness. You cannot be. You have to be a totally independent expert witness. Okay, if you're going to be testifying, you can, in answer to your question, be a consultant. Okay, consultants can do that if you want to be a consultant for an organization. I am a consultant for numbers of organizations involving children.
And okay? What does that look like?
What that looks like is that for two of them particularly, one is for child abuse and spouse abuse. Okay. I would be a consultant with them because there's not going to be a lawsuit. Okay. There's no lawsuit going to be involved. And I would look at it from the standpoint, like with children, I would give my opinion as a consultant, whether what my opinion is, what's happened to the child, what is happening to the child, and what I would expect to have the child. And then they would make the decisions on what's going to happen to the child. Okay. As a consultant, you can do that. All right. In those situations, I do it in a word called pro bono. I do not get paid for that.
Okay. And then if somebody wants to follow in your footsteps, how is somebody like in my situation as a dental student, how would I go about finding resources or joining clubs or finding programs to get trained in?
That's an excellent question. The requirements to be an expert is that you understand what the standard of care and how it should be. Your obligation right now is to be the best dental student that you can be and learn everything you can, have fun with it, and like it. Okay? There's nothing that you can do at this stage of your career in that regard, except be the best dental student that you can be. And when you come out of dental school, is to be the best dentist that you can be and go and learn what these other areas are, okay, in dentistry that you become very competent in. And then you start looking at particular areas. Let's just say that as a general dentist now, okay, as a general dentist, you don't give expert witness opinion on what a pediatrician did. You don't give an expert opinion on what an orthodontist did. Okay. And have you had, like with surgeries and implants, you have to know how to do the implants and be trained in them and do them yourself because you'll be asked. So that's where you grow within yourself. Because in the expert witness category, your job is to evaluate what someone else did. Did they do it right? Or didn't they do it? They did not do it right. That's what an expert witness does.
Now, with the peds specifically, like with how you're helping out doing pro bono work, have you done any peds training, or is that based off your oral surgery residency? Are you able to kind of understand traumatology and be able to look at that and kind of know what's going on there?
Yes. All right. With that situation, the credentials that I use for that is my PhD in pain management. All right. There's a lot of psychology in pain management. All right. And children who are hurt fall into my category. And I can do that talking specifically about injuries and what happened to the child. The decision what happens to the child between his parents and the state or the city is not something that I would be making recommendations for. That goes to the people who have that responsibility. My responsibility is to describe what happened and what are the injuries that are there. And that is from my training from that. I chose not to do any specific training in pediatric dentistry. Mine is in pediatric trauma and cranial and radiology for cranial and cervical. So you stay within your sandbox, you see. It all comes back to the same thing. Right back to the sandbox. What is your sandbox? What have you learned? So your question comes is that as a dental student, there's a box out there. And you have a shovel and you're putting sand in your sandbox, right? Is that a good description? Mm-hmm. You're learning this and you're learning that. And you're learning how to do these different things. And you take that shovel full of sand and you put it in your sandbox and you're building it. When you get to dental school, your sandbox is empty. Mm-hmm. They give you a sandbox. It's up to you to decide what goes into your sandbox. And then with the sand that's in there that you know, that is how you proceed. When you want to proceed farther, as I described in radiology and something like that, and pain management, you need to go out and get the shovel and do it. And that's exactly as I described. It was 6 years doing the PhD training. The radiology training took 3 years. That's a lot of shoveling and flying from Orlando to California and to Dallas and things like that and everything else, because I chose to do that.
I feel
everything,
like
everything you do in your dental training will be your choice.
I was going to say, I feel like I'm picking up on an overarching theme, is that life doesn't come with an instruction manual kind of telling you, hey, you know, this happened in your life, now you do X, Y, Z. You mm-hmm. kind of, you observe what's happening and then you orient yourself, right? We talked about pivoting in the other episode, and kind of determining, I want to do this thing now, or I want to dump more sand into my sandbox here. And that's mm-hmm. kind of the direction that you kind of forge for yourself as you go through mm-hmm. school, as you go through continuing education, as you go through your practice. You are kind of growing and developing your, I don't necessarily want to call it a niche, but you're almost developing that niche for what you want to be doing.
Yes.
You could be making your own beach.
Well, you know, what happens is you are looking at not a beach, because a beach is too wide and there's so much sand going out there and the waves are coming in and everything else. However, as an expert witness, every one of the waves of an expert witness involves one or two or three lawyers who are going to be asking you questions about your sandbox and your beach. So I've had many, many people who wanted to go and do things like this or become a specialist, and then chose, as they were doing their education, they didn't want to do that. And then pivoted, as we said, back into general dentistry. Okay. Coming back to where it is. And you choose your direction, because we all come out of dental school. I am a general dentist. The very first thing on my CV says general dentist. Okay. I'm in Canada. They also have a specialty for facial pain and TMJ. We don't have that among our specialties of the ADA. So I am a general dentist. We all come out as general dentists. Okay. Until you decide you want to be a specialist. So let's just say that you really, really enjoy doing surgery. Really enjoy it. That just really trips your trigger. You're ready to go. And then you decide to go into surgery by doing more and more. And then you make a decision to continue with it. Okay. That's where, again, I have recommended to dentists who wanted to specialize to go and be mentored by an oral surgeon. Okay. A general dentist does not know exactly what it's like to have a life as an oral surgeon. Okay. You have an opportunity with people to go and watch them and spend a day as an oral surgeon in your brain. You see yourself doing it. And if you like it, you really get going. I have had many students, undergrad students, come and shadow us and decide that they didn't want to be dentists. They did not want to be dentists. So this is not what they thought dentistry was. Okay, one patient after the other, 30 a day or 20 a day, and made the decision that they didn't want to become dentists. And that is the pivot in their life that's correct, when they decide that this is not what I want.
Okay. And for anybody who's outside of, you know, dental school, so somebody who's graduated, what last advice would you have for somebody that wants to pursue a career in forensic dentistry?
If someone wanted to pursue that, there are dental societies or dental groups, as I described them, who are that train you how to do that. Okay. They train you, the American Academy of expert that I've gotten my certifications in medical and dental, my doctors. You go to their meetings and you sit there and you listen. And either it attracts you or says, I don't want this. There are many components to this. Do you have the strength to be able to do a deposition and go on trial, that you're strong enough in your opinion? Because the other side in a lawsuit and everything else is representing the person who says that you're wrong. Okay? Are you strong enough to do that? And you learn that, and you learn that actually lawyers, when they're being trained, have what they call mock trials. I have taken place in mock depositions and everything else in my training before the certification, where they force you to do that, and then you learn. It's very similar to going to dental school. All right. How'd you feel when you did your first filling?
pretty nervous on that.
All right. Did you have an instructor check the tooth before you started?
Oh yeah.
Did he have a check your prep?
Yes.
Every step of the way.
And they checked it when it was all done?
Yes.
That is exactly the kind of training that I'm describing. That you go with professionals who train you. You can't do this on your own. You just can't say, I'm an expert in this, I'm an expert in that. You need to be trained professionally with that. And that's my advice, as I said, with everybody. If I was going to become an expert witness and I wanted to see it, I'd go see some trials.
Right.
And watch what happens to an expert. Okay, watch what happens and say, can I do this? Can I not do this?
I imagine cross examinations can get pretty intense.
Oh, it does. That's why I said earlier, what is the rule? You never deviate from what you know is the standard of care and what it's supposed to look like.
And remain cool under pressure.
You have to know exactly from the ADA and other groups. If you're doing surgery, as a general dentist, especially here in Florida, if you're doing oral surgery, you have to do it to the same standard that an oral surgeon would do it. Okay? And that's what happens as you want to become an expert. You have to know exactly how it's supposed to be done. And that takes time, okay? I would say in my own career, I didn't really get good at this or really into it until probably 7 or 8 years into my career, okay?
So be patient with yourself.
Yeah, I was going through things and looking at a big general practice, and I decided that my decision was, when I looked at something and somebody was hurt by something that should not have been done, they deserve an honest answer. Okay? They deserve an honest answer, just like with the children. You learn how to call it. You learn how to call it. You're learning how to call it right now, right?
Yes, sir.
You make it an MOD. How do you do it? Do you do it with composite? Do you do it with amalgam? Schools don't even have, we do amalgams. We're going to do different ways of doing things. You learn how to make decisions of what's going on. And then the instructors come and say, I'll give you a Wisconsin saying, yeah, sure, you betcha. Hey, that's exactly what's supposed to be done. Okay. All right. And that way, you know what's supposed to be. Okay.
Dr. Anders, thank you so much for joining us today. I know we've kept you on for a minute. really appreciate you.
No, it's totally my pleasure. It is totally my pleasure to spend time with you. And and from the insights that I've had, I just grew up as a Wisconsin farm boy, growing up on a farm, joined the Navy at 17. And because in Wisconsin, the little town, we had nothing else to do. You had to marry a girl who's had a farm who doesn't have any older brothers. You know, you go in that kind of situation and you take life as it comes to you.
What?
You start learning that. And sharing with you today is my honor and privilege. Thank you.
If anyone wanted to reach out to you or follow you in any way, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Call me. All right. I have general dentists all the time call me about things that they have questions about, especially now that you can do things FaceTime. I do FaceTime examinations and coordinate with that and radiology all over the United States.
And sir, we really appreciate you again making time for us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Can I say one thing to you all?
Please.
Go for it. You made the commitment already. You're there. Go for it.
Thank you so much, sir.
Yes, thank sir. You. Thank you so much, Pat Savannah. No, thank you so much.
You have been listening to The Smart Dental Student. The views, information, and opinions expressed during this recording are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent the organizations that the individuals are affiliated with. If you enjoyed the content of this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. Also, you can follow us on Instagram at Smart Dental Student or visit our website for more information at smartdentalstudent.com.